"We were scared," Eustace said. "The sky's gone real funny. It's so hot. Nobody collected the eggs or milked the cows." Beau narrowed her eyes as the mercenaries climbed out of the hovercraft. "Are these the marines you promised?" she asked skeptically. "Not quite," Horst said, "but they're just as good." Danny goggled up at Sewell. The big combat adept had gauze rifles plugged into both elbow sockets. "What is he?" the boy asked. Horst grinned. "He's a special sort of soldier. Very strong, very clever. Everything is going to be all right now. He'll look after you." Kelly had kept her retinas on wide-field focus, scanning the whole reunion scene. There was a big dry lump forming in her throat. "Holy Jesus, will you look at it all?" Sean Wallace said in a small, demoralized voice. "What kind of a god could do this to us? Not the one I was taught about, that's for sure. Look at them all, little children, crying their bloody damn eyes out. And all for what?" Kelly turned round at the unaccustomed savagery and bitterness in his tone, but he was already striding towards Reza, who was watching Horst and the children impassively. "Mr. Malin." "Yes, Mr. Wallace?" "You have to move these children away now."
"I intend to."
"No, I mean right now. My kind, they're over there in the edge of the jungle. There's a couple of hundred of them, if not more. They're meaning to get you, Mr. Malin, to end the threat once and for all." Reza focused his senses on the first rank of stunted, scrappy trees 4 or 5 kilometers away. The cloud over the jungle was still glowing a somber red, giving the leaves a coral tinge. Heat shimmer and fluttering leaves defeated him, he couldn't tell. "Pat, what can Octon see?" "Nothing much, but there's definitely a few people roving round in there and—" "Oh, my God!" The pages emerged first, young boys, 10 or 12 years old, holding their heraldic banners high. Then the drums started up, and the pikemen marched out of the cover of trees. It was a long, solid black line, almost as if the trees themselves were advancing. Following, and holding a tight formation at the centre, came the mounted knights. Silver armour shone by its own accord under the unbroken veil of leaden clouds. The army assembled itself in front of the trees to the order of the drummer. Knight commanders rode up and down, organizing stragglers. Then, when the ranks were neatly laid out, a single bugle note rang across the savannah. They started to tramp over the uneven grassland towards the homestead. "Okay," Reza said equably. "Time to go." Along with all the other children, Jay found herself being hurriedly lifted into one of the hovercraft by a mercenary and told to hang on. Boxes and equipment were being tossed out to accommodate them. Father Horst was in the other hovercraft. Jay wanted to be with him, but she didn't think the mercenaries would listen if she asked. Shona was plonked down beside her, and Jay smiled timidly, reaching for the disfigured girl's hand. Their fingers pressed together urgently. There was a lot of shouting going on all around. Everyone was moving at such a rush. One of the big, really big, mercenaries dashed into the homestead and came out half a minute later carrying Freya. "Put her in my hovercraft," Horst said. "I'll look after her." The limp girl was laid on the front bench, and he eased a bundle of cloth under her head. Through all the confusion and bustle, Jay saw one of the mercenaries strap a dark globe to the neck of a huge dog. A man, who she thought looked a bit like Rye Mulvey, and a lady, who had come with the mercenaries, were arguing hotly in front of the cabin. It ended when she made a slashing motion with one arm and climbed into the pilot seat of the second hovercraft. The other mercenaries were ransacking the ammunition boxes that lay on the ground, slotting magazines into their backpacks. Then the impellers on Jay's hovercraft began to spin, and the decking wobbled as it rose up. She wondered where the mercenaries were going to fit. Her hovercraft had 17 children packed in between the pilot seat and a fan at the rear. But when both vehicles swung round and began to pick up speed, she realized they were jogging alongside. "Where are we going?" Shona shouted above the teeth-grating buzz of the fans. The small, hairless pilot didn't seem to hear. Aethra watched the Lady Macbeth streak across the ring. triple fusion exhausts twining into a single braid of near-pure radiation that stretched forever over 200 kilometers behind the fleeing starship.